you spin it, it doesn't stay round. It sort of deforms like a tennis ball with a tremendous right. spin on it. It flattens out. Now, if you look at it from the edge, it looks like a ring of death. You know, it's light cannot escape it. If your planet goes into it, you're going to be tidally distended like you see in the movies. Sort of the front part of your ship is torn apart, and then the center part, and then the end part, and you're no longer recognizable. But if you look at this sort of like a large donut, and the diameter of the hole in the donut is, say, the distance across our solar system, then what you have is a center of this black hole that is tremendously warping space-time. But there's no mass in it. All the mass is in the outer ring. So a planet could pass from one point in the universe to another point in the universe, or from one universe to another universe, without being destroyed.
All right, now, are you saying that it was just Earth that did this, or our entire solar system?
Well, for the purposes of our book, we just stick with Earth.
Okay, all right.
Earth is different enough from the other planets in our solar system. Well, it's different enough from our own moon. Earth is made of primarily iron and nickel, which is pretty stable, and the moon is made of primarily aluminum and titanium. So they could not have coalesced from the same homogeneous cloud of dust.
Give me sort of, if you can, Dr. Agnew, a scientific picture, if you want to paint this for us, of what's happening. Earth is in some other section of the galaxy. It somehow finds its way into this spinning black hole. Tell us what happens then.
Well, relative to the people that are on that Earth, a short amount of time passes, a short amount of distance occurs. But relative to someone, say, outside that field, or say on the other side of the black hole, they would see a planet moving across immeasurable distances of space and time in an instant. So the beings, Noah's people, that lived on that Earth, living 800, 900, 1,000 years, then blend with sort of, if you want to call it a different phase, or if you want to call it like a water droplet swallowing up a dust ball, it blends with this temporal Earth and the race of men that are on this Earth. Now, of course, it's cataclysmic. A lot of people on both worlds are destroyed, but some survive. And then the two races and all the ecology that's with it, the animals in the sea and in the air, all have to find a new ecology. And what we see in paleobiology and paleobotany is that DNA is going along rather simple and predictable, and then all of a sudden, somewhere in the timeline, the DNA radically changes. Life becomes much more sophisticated. It makes a tremendous DNA jump, including man. We look at the DNA of man, and we've been fairly successful. Now, this isn't my area of expertise, but we have been fairly successful in mapping the gene map of man. And what we found is that 90% of the DNA that makes up a human being is unexpressed here. And nature...
90%.
Right. Nature does not develop things by its environment that aren't needed, which means that the DNA that makes up you and me was developed somewhere else.
Or else we would have been able to use up all of it. What you're saying is 10% of it may have been created here, right?
It's possible that 10% of it was created here, maybe more. But the point is that we were either developed somewhere else, which is highly likely, or we will complete our development somewhere else.
Okay. Now, what's the significance of the travel from one location to here?
Well, I can't explain that from a scientific standpoint, but I can from maybe ancient documents.
All right.
It is believed that the origin of the Earth was originally created at God's footstool, generally in his neighborhood, shall we say. And when it was ready, and this Earth was ready, he intelligently moved it into the black hole or whatever mechanism he used to move it from the center of our galaxy to here.
Why even move it? Why not just keep it where it was?
Well, that's a good question, but yeah. You have to kind of look at the big picture. And I don't mean to get too spiritual here, but if we believe, and I believe many people do, that they are the literal offspring of God, then he creates an environment by which we can reach our fullest potential. And that environment here is one where our senses are very limited, and our spirit, or what makes our personality, our soul, if you will, yearns for something far beyond what we can grasp with our physical. And so it makes us grow in a way that we cannot grow in another environment. So if you will just permit me, it's because this is the design by which his children are allowed to reach their full potential. And that's why it's moved. And we're not the only world. There are worlds without number.
Prior to the move, then, of the planet, this fascinates me, the Earth was inhabited, right?
Yes.
Okay. Those inhabitants, what happened to them? Did they survive the travel?
Yes, many of them survived. The ones that traveled with Noah survived, and the ones that were here survived. But, of course, there were vast amounts of the civilizations that perished.
So you believe the story, the biblical story of Noah's Ark, is based primarily not of the Ark being a ship, but the Ark being the planet, if I understand you right.
Yes, the ship is actually on the planet. So the Ark may have been a literal craft, but the life that came with it, if you consider all of the genetic material, the different animals that are on this planet, the Ark would have had to have been the size of California instead of 20 million cubic feet,
well,
the way people have
true.
Calculated it.
And we would have found it by now then.
Yeah. So what the ancient records say is that there was a union of the polarity, that Noah and his people came here with a planet.
Stay with us. This is a fascinating theory you've come up with. Dr. Brooks Agnew, physicist, he's done it all. We'll be back in a moment.